This is Matt Barry, and welcome to the ESPN College Football Podcast. Today's episode is going to be great. Kirk Herbstreit's going to join me, as well as Paul Feinbaum. But I want to break down what's going to be happening this season. It's an exciting new season here at the ESPN College Football Podcast. We are going Sunday through Thursday, 5 days a week, starting Sunday, August 29th, all the way to the national championship game in Indianapolis. Here's how the schedule breaks down. On Sunday, it'll be me, Matt Barry, with Paul Feinbaum. On Monday, I'll be joined by Kirk Herbstreit. Tuesday, we'll hand the ball off to Reese Davis and David Pollack. Wednesday, Kevin Negandhi will be with his ABC teammate, Booger McFarland. And then Thursday, Negandhi, my apologies to him, he'll be with my ESPN college football teammate, Joey Galloway. So follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Tell your friends we're excited to get started here on the ESPN college football podcast.
The ESPN College Football Podcast.
You know, the date was January 11th. The location was Miami Gardens, Miami. It was the last time we saw competitive football, and it was Alabama winning the national championship. Well, good news for you. College football is back. So are we. Welcome to the College Football Podcast. Matt Barry and Kirk Herbstreit with you every week. Herbie, we did it. We made it.
Exactly. Man, what a year 2020 was on so many different levels, but especially for football fans. It was challenging for the players and coaches. It was challenging for folks like you and I that were trying to talk about the game, but that's behind us. Now we, as of right now, knocking on wood, we got fans, we have tailgating, we have bands, we have college football, we have pageantry. That's what it's all about.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because this offseason completely different than last year. The pandemic dominated the conversation last year. But this year, going into the season, we're talking about playoff expansion, NIL, conference realignment, alliances, and all of this garbage. And I say that affectionately because I would much rather be arguing about stuff like that than talking about whether or not it's feasible and safe to even be playing football. This year, it felt a little bit back to normal that we were arguing about things we really have no control over.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I don't know. I don't know how you feel about this. I almost feel like it's a crossroads for the sport. You know, this time, this era, you know, you just mentioned a bunch of different things that are going on. I just feel like when you and I fell in love with this sport, it had nothing to do with the national championship race or implications every week. It had nothing to do with, you know, the NFL and where this player, where he's going to fit into the NFL. It had everything to do with it could be number 18 in the country on the road against number 15 in the country. Yeah. And you love that game and that atmosphere and the competition of it and the momentum of the game and, you know, the blocked punt or whatever it was. It just, you fell in love with the passion of the sport. And when the dust settled and the game was over, you know, it was like, oh, man, what a game. You know, then the next one started. And it was never about, well, this game doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, this game doesn't impact the playoffs, so who cares? Or, you know, you're late in the year, it's like, well, you're not going to, you know, you're in the playoff, you're only going to that bowl game. So that game doesn't matter. Like, it's like a new thing. Games don't matter. What's in it for us? What's in it for me? Kind of mentality from fans and some players. It's just a new way of people, I guess, looking at college football. I still look at it like I love the passion of the sport. Yeah. I don't care, with all due respect, to the playoff. I love the playoff. It's a lot of fun, but that's not what makes me get excited every single. I could watch Kentucky go to Jordan-Hare. Neither team's ranked. I don't give a crap. I just want to see Kentucky, see if they can go on the road and win at Jordan-Hare. You know, let's see what Bo Nix has for us today. All right, Bo, let's see what old Bo's going to do. Like, that's me
that's
every
football.
Game I watch.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be watching Nebraska-Illinois like it's the Big Ten championship this weekend because I want to see if Brett Bielema can make it hell for Scott Frost out of week one.
Yeah,
that's the sport. It's not, you know, I hope that we get – I hope that becomes the prevailing thought because – I heard someone say the other day, and I almost slapped him across the face, like, well, it's only week zero. Well, what do you mean it's only week zero? I think UCLA is going to be one of the sleeper teams in the country. Huh? They got to play Hawaii. Like, I want to see DTR. Like, don't tell me it doesn't. Don't tell me bowl games don't matter, that I'm going to opt out. And it's just, I just want to get to the point where we're back to where it's all about that Saturday for that game and that week.
But see, I really believe that instead of getting in debates with people that maybe it's week zero or that game, again, doesn't matter. Like, instead of me trying to get into an argument with a person like that, I'm going to relish the sport. I'm going to relish for me and what, like, we get Bear and I and John Wiley and my buddy Darren, we get on the back of the Allstate bus like you do with Joey and Jesse. And as soon as game day's over at noon, it's a race to get to the bus, and we were flying as fast as we can, and we want to get to the back of the bus. We want to get the Mississippi State game on screen one. All right, let's get that Illinois game over here on screen. Like, we get all the TVs. Bear's in charge of that. We get all the TVs going. We got every big screen in the middle. We'll turn the audio up on that. We get the lights down, air conditioning down, and then we just, here we go. And then we just argue. We yell. We make fun of each other. We just watch football until 7:30 p.m. when I got to go into the stadium and call the 8 o'clock game. And that's what I'm going to live in, that lane right there. And I'm not going to worry if people are like, well, name, image, and likeness and transfer portal. And what do you think of the alliance? And I know we have to talk about that stuff because we have to, but I'm not going to emotionally be attached to that. I'm going to just enjoy the season. I'm going to enjoy the teams and the competition of it all. And every game that I watch matters because enjoy it. So I don't really care about the rest of it.
Right. Because you can't, I've learned now, I can't push my football beliefs on people as much as I can push my beliefs on vaccines and you can't please everybody. I just know that growing up, this was the sport that I chose to love. It helped because I didn't have a pro team in Arizona until the Cardinals came in 87. And even then they weren't a pro team, or 88. But I think it just helped that, to me, it was about the morning kickoff. You get a little break, get me those mid-afternoon kickoffs. Those games always end up being the best games of the day. Then you get into the big ones in prime time. And then for the degenerates, you got Hawaii out left, which is why they're the most gambled team on in the country, because it was always a way to get back everything from the day. And to me, it's what it is. And that's why this Saturday, College Game Day, you guys will be in Atlanta for the Max Weak Challenge. Is that correct?
Yes.
So again, that matters to Max Weak. That's a big game for those conferences, because you know what it is? They don't get the national spotlight. Well, guess what? Saturday they get it, and it means everything to them.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I think so many distractions, you know, I think that we get a chance, whether about five or six games, you know, coming up this opening weekend or week zero, we're going to celebrate, you know, HBCU football in Atlanta. We're going to have Eddie George and Deion Sanders are going to be on with us. And we're going to talk about their teams as well. We're talking about the history of HBCU. So we're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be great to be together. You know, Lee Corso hadn't been with us since, you know, 2019, the LSU Clemson game, with us physically in person. And he'll be there with us. We're going to be doing, you know, predictions on the season and just kind of celebrating college football right there in Atlanta. So that'll kind of kick us off for game day. And then, of course, we get to Charlotte week one when everybody will be out playing. But yeah, man, it's I'm with you. I think we got to get to a point where we just embrace the good news of this sport, which is the competition of it. I know that we on game day are going to make a very, very strong effort. I know you guys already do, but sometimes in these opinion driven shows, you know, you work on SportsCenter and you work with the analysts who jump in as a guest with you from time to time. Everything on SportsCenter and everything on studio shows is opinion driven. Yeah. You know, we're going to throw something against the wall, see if it sticks. And game day, we during this playoff era, we get caught up a little bit in that myopic view of the sport. And it's like playoff, playoff, playoff. And this year we're going to broaden that scope, you know, the way it should be, and celebrate other games and try to get in more of the spirit of like not just looking at the five teams that matter out of 130 some, whatever there is. We're going to look at more games and be excited about more games.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too far ahead of, we'll get to week one in a minute because some news regarding week one today came out that I want to get to with the quarterbacks, but I do want to stay in that week zero lane for a minute because I just mentioned it a second ago with Brett Bielema, Illinois, Scott Frost, Nebraska. We talk about it all the time when a coaching vacancy gets filled and we label it, is it a good fit or a bad fit. I tend to believe that, you know, there are coaches that want to test those SEC waters, and these are damn good coaches, and it doesn't always hit. I thought Brett Bielema had a nice stint at Arkansas. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination it was great. But him being back in the Big Ten, Herbie, it just looks and feels right.
It does. There is something about him coming back. And I've stayed in touch with him as he left the Big Ten, of course, went to Arkansas, and then eventually ended up back in the NFL. And I think he missed it. You know, I think he missed that region. He played at Iowa. He grew up in Illinois. I mean, he's as Big Ten through and through as anybody you're ever going to meet, and had a lot of success. I mean, he left Madison after three straight Rose Bowl trips, and then he leaves to go to Arkansas. And I think, hindsight's 2020. He would probably love to have never done that, but he took a chance and thought it might work out. And he's fortunate that he gets another opportunity. When I played in the Big Ten, late 80s, mid 90s, early 90s, Illinois was dangerous, man. They had players, Dana Howard and Kevin Hardy and Kevin Verduzco and Jeff George was a quarterback. And if you go back even into the early to mid 80s, Mike White was the head coach, and Illinois was a dominant team. You never went to Champaign and got out of there alive. Jack Trudeau was a great quarterback. So there's history there. I think maybe the generation of football fan currently doesn't remember some of those Illinois teams. They're like, Illinois, they're never going to win. I don't know. You get a dynamic head coach with a big personality that knows that area, can recruit. It wouldn't shock me at all to see Brett Bielema. I don't know about in 2021, but give him a chance to build up, and Illinois can go. And at the very least, they're going to have a swagger about themselves. They're going to, he's going to do a onside kick and the opening kickoff in 2021. I mean, there's going to be some stuff going on there, and there's going to be some excitement that has not been there for a long time. And I think he's inherited. Lovie Smith left him some players. So that is not an easy game for Nebraska. Nebraska should be concerned about that game.
And you need, it wasn't too long ago, there was Juice Williams, Rashard Mendenhall, and Aurelius Ben, and that Ron Zook team in the Rose Bowl. And they do have some periods of good football, but Illinois to me is one of those programs. Look, they're not food group in the Big Ten, but the Big Ten's better when they're good. When Illinois is going to give you a fight, it's a good league. It's kind of like when Northwestern can come up, and Iowa's always consistent. When some of these teams are going to mess with you for four quarters, it's good for the conference.
It's so true. I think you could bounce around and look at every conference and talk about certain teams that kind of help with the reputation of a conference. The Big Ten, they need Iowa. They need teams like Northwestern and Illinois. You need that equator to drop a little bit and get you to where you have that seventh and eighth team, six, seven, and eight team, where it's like, oh man, these teams are not just bowl eligible. They're kind of dangerous, especially when you play them at home. And I think that's where Bielema is going to try to get that team this year. We'll see if he can do it. I mean, they've got a quarterback in Peters, who's Brandon Peters, started at Michigan. He's played a lot of football. At least he's got a guy that's played. They've got some skill. He's a defensive-minded coach, so they're going to play with kind of a chip on their shoulder. And then, to me, you got Nebraska, who, my gosh, you got off-the-field issues. You got a team that can't quite get things going with Scott Frost. I mean, if there's ever a team that needs to start with a win, it's Nebraska. And Scott Frost to try to turn down some of the noise between he and Jim Harbaugh. They're having to deal with a lot of just stuff, and nothing better to kind of quiet some of that than to be able to get a win. But they're 12-20 in the 3 years that he's been the head coach at Nebraska. So they're going to come out, you would think, ready to go and ready to compete. And that's Again, you and I, Illinois, Nebraska at Illinois, it's it's game on. Yeah, let's go. Let's go play some football.
That might as well be week one, Michigan, Ohio State, because I can't wait to see conference football in week one. And the thing with Frost, and I don't know, because when he was coming out, when he had that year at UCF, he knew he was going to be the highest, you know, rated coach to fill a job. I never thought Nebraska was an option, Kirk, because I didn't think it fit what he was looking to do. And I get it. Won a national championship. He's the golden boy. Sometimes that doesn't always work out. I remember Florida was flirting with him. I mean, could you think about what he could have done down at Florida with that offense? Had that not, I don't know. It's an athlete thing with me with Nebraska. Not to say they don't have him. I just don't know that he's able to bring in some of the guys that are conducive to the type of offense and scheme that he wants to run.
Think about when ASU played Nebraska. It was 96 with Jake the Snake and Arizona State upset them. But just think about the caliber of athlete. That was a huge upset for ASU. Just think about what Nebraska used to throw out there on the field. You know, I was watching some highlights on ESPNU, or I can't remember, it was Big Ten Network, and it was Nebraska. They had back-to-back, like the 94 team in their championship, the 95 team in their championship. Then it was a lot of fun to look at it. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Their backfields?
Look at their, not just Lawrence Phillips and those
Amon
guys,
Green was there.
Amon Green, but their defensive line.
Oh,
holy cow.
Like Grant Winstrom?
The half jerseys, Jared Tomich. I mean, I'm like, why are those guys not there right now? Like what the Peters brothers?
Yeah.
I mean, those guys were scary players. Why aren't those guys coming to Lincoln, Nebraska right now?
You know, it seems to me Oklahoma had a little bit of a down period under Blake before they got Bob Stoops. Then Stoops comes in there, wins that national championship right away. But it seems to me that players within that region either kept going south or started going to Oklahoma. Because remember, back in Tom Osborne, the in-state talent or anywhere around there, you weren't playing for anybody but Tom Osborne. Yeah. And Barry Switzer had it going back then. And so Oklahoma was obviously dominant back when Tom Osborne was running the thing. But I think now that athletes have more of a choice and there's more of a way to see the world, and there's internet, there's social media, and they know that there's life outside of this Great Plains bubble, I just think a lot of them were choosing to go other places. And it's sad because Nebraska is one of those teams that's good. It's great for college football.
See, I look at Nebraska and I think, wait a second, when Tommy Frazier was there and Terrell Farley and all these guys, they got their linemen from the region you're talking about.
Yeah.
But if you looked at their secondary and you looked at the quarterbacks and the running backs, the receivers, a lot of the skill, they're getting into Southern California. They're getting into Texas. They're getting into Florida. They're getting into New Jersey. So they had different pockets that Tom Osborne and the continuity on the offensive and defensive staffs, because those guys didn't leave. I mean, they were there for over 20 years, and they would go back to that. They'd go back to that same high school region in New Jersey. They'd go back to that same area in Florida. They'd go back year after year to Texas. And it was just, they didn't get them all, but they got enough of them to bring them in with the big offensive lineman and defensive lineman. And I don't know. I just feel like, why can't they still do that? If I'm a high school player, and I go to a football game on a Saturday in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I see that fan base and I feel that energy. I mean, I don't know. It just seems like they should be able to attract not maybe all the five-star guys the way Alabama and Ohio State are doing, but a few of them to be able to give them a chance. And I did an Ohio State-Nebraska game a couple years ago. The game was over. It was in Lincoln. Game was over. Justin Fields is a quarterback. Two series in.
Yeah.
It was over. It was over. I mean, it was like, they can't play with that. The team in the red jerseys can't play with the team in the white jerseys. Game, set, match, two series into the game. And that should not, I don't care where Nebraska is, that should not be the case. So I keep holding out hope. You know, I keep thinking, cause I like Scott Frost. I keep thinking he's going to be able to kind of get them going. But now all this stuff with off the field stuff that they had going on, I don't know where they are, but they desperately need a win, kind of start the season off the right way. And I'm just saying that, you know, I haven't looked. Are they favored? I'm assuming they're favored.
I would say, yeah, I haven't looked at that line yet. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm just saying they got to, you know, they're going to play a pesky, don't look at film from last year and say, oh, well, it's Illinois. They're going to show up with a mindset, and it'll be the first time Nebraska's played in front of a crowd, you know, in a couple of years. So it'll be tough on the road.
I grew up going to the Fiesta Bowl because it was in my backyard. I remember that Tommy Frazier game against Steve Spurrier in Florida. Oh, and I remember my high school teammate, Mike Brown. He was the top rated recruit in the state of Arizona.
Number 20.
Yeah. And he didn't, we were thinking, oh, Mikey's going to go. So he didn't think about any other school other than Nebraska. He's like, that's where I'm going to go play football. And mind you, this is the top rated running back in the country, top rated defensive back in the country. He wanted to go be a black shirt. That's what Nebraska meant to him. He's like, I'm going to go be a black shirt and I'm going to go play safety. Cool. Ralph Brown's going to be on the other side. And I'm just going to go bang heads. And so I hope they get back to that point.
I was going to say, you said Fiesta Bowl. I was on a call with a guy the other day that lives in Phoenix. And we were talking about the Fiesta Bowl. And I said, you know what? I mean, Glendale, that new stadium, the way they roll in the grass is cool. I mean, it's a beautiful field. It's a pretty stadium and all on the inside. But I'm, as a fan and as a guy who covers these games, I miss Sun Devil Stadium, for the Fiesta Bowl. I don't know if it's because there were so many big moments in that stadium. There's so much history in that stadium. And I know that we live in an era, it's about money and generating money with suites and all that. I get it. But I don't know if you know Fiesta Bowl people. If there's any way they can move that back to Sun Devil Stadium,
I'm with you.
I would be a fan.
Man,
I'd be a fan.
My memories are T. Martin hitting Peerless Price for a touchdown to win a national championship. And that team with Jamal Lewis, Ron Paulus and Notre Dame taking on Colorado. I mean, these are the games where you're like, this place, you know, and you're right. We've gotten so luxury suites and dialed in. It's like, I just need bleachers and lights.
It's just a sterile NFL stadium. I mean, it's a big NFL stadium, and I mean, it's pretty, it's beautiful, but first of all, Tempe, you can't beat Tempe. You know, you hang out on that strip where you probably were a lot, and you go to restaurants and bars, and you just walk right to the game. I mean, it's such a great setup. I saw a Super Bowl there. I think it was 96 Cowboys Steelers.
Larry Brown.
Larry Brown with the pick six. I was there, ironically, with Galloway, just as fans. We were just there to watch the game. And man, I just thought, man, this is such a great stadium. And there's historic moments. And I think there's something cool about some of these stadiums when you have those great moments. And sometimes the shiny new stadium isn't always the right answer. You know, it's like in LA right now. They have a new stadium in LA, which I'm sure it's great. It's beautiful. But I'd rather see a game at the Rose Bowl, you know, you know what I mean? At the shiny, brand new, however many billions of dollars that stadium costs. I'm sure it's incredible. But, you know, take me over to the Rose Bowl for sure. Yeah,
give me a place that looks like it's been around since the 1920s.
Yeah.
We'll get out of here on this one as we preview Week Zero. Looking forward to the start of college football season. We had some clarity today. I thought one of the big storylines coming into the offseason was how many top six teams were breaking in new starting quarterbacks. Haynes King named the starter by Jimbo Fisher today for Texas A&M. So now we know the starting quarterbacks, the top six: Bryce Young, Spencer Rattler, DJ Uiagalelei, CJ Stroud, JT Daniels, and now Haynes King. Kirk, when you look at the opportunity for the new guy, DJ doesn't count because he started against Notre Dame last year. But when you look at the opportunity for the new guy, who do you believe has the best opportunity to move the offense the way the coach is looking to move it?
Well, I think CJ Stroud has a few things going in his favor. He's never attempted a pass yet in his career. He's going to go to Minnesota on a Thursday night next week against the Gophers. But he's got maybe the best tandem in all of college football, and Olave and Garrett Wilson. You got Jeremy Tucker, who arguably is the best tight end in the country. Yep. You got Master Teague, who's a veteran behind you. This freshman, remember that name, Travion Henderson.
Yeah.
They're saying he's doing some things that like J.K. Dobbins could do, and he's a true freshman. So you got a lot of pieces, and they think this offensive line might be the best they've ever had. So you just want to get, it's like you're getting the keys to the brand new car, you know, and you just don't want to mess anything up. And from what I hear, he's been lights out. I mean, they got a great quarterback room. Yeah. And when you have Ryan Day dialing up plays for you, I mean, it's just don't try to do too much. Just if the flat's open, throw it in the flat. If the run's there, take the run. Uh-oh, they bit on that. Now I can take my shot. So, and Ryan Day will get him where he's not trying to force the issue. But I would say C.J. Stroud, because of his talent, number one, and then the surrounding cast of characters that he has to work with, and then Ryan Day and that system that they're playing with. I think Ohio State, depending on how well Stroud plays, they're a real, like, you kind of forget about them because Fields is gone and they lost a lot of weapons. They're going to be right there. They may be as good, if not better, than they were. I also think Bryce Young, you can say the exact same thing that I just said about Bryce Young. Now, he's breaking in some new people. Yep. But I was standing there next to Joey and Coach Saban in the spring game, and I'm sitting there watching this kid, and I'm like, it's like he's a fifth-year senior. He's just so chill.
Right.
Very much like Tua, just chill. And I think both those guys are going to put up huge seasons in 2021.
Yeah, he's got the new receiver. I mean, obviously, the entire receiver room from last year is in the NFL. Bill O'Brien's coming in from the NFL. He's the offensive coordinator. I would say, with regards to Jimbo and Haynes King, I don't think, to me, I don't think there's a tougher coach in America to play a quarterback for than Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah.
And so, Haynes, those growing pains are probably going to hurt a little bit. And I know A&M's a trendy pick to click. They've got a lot of skill players coming back themselves. They got Spiller. They got the tight end wider. Like, they've got a lot of dudes. But it's going to be, for me, for them, it's all on quarterback play. I was one of the rare people that thought Kellen Mond was just on the north side of good. I didn't think he was great.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think breaking in a new starting quarterback should be looked at a little more critically than it was this offseason. But I'm with you, probably CJ with what he's got coming back. Bryce Young at a modern day. I mean, the kid's got everything, and we'll see where the chips fall. Because I start looking at, I'm looking at the rankings right now. Brock Purdy at 7, Desmond Ridder at 8. Like, these are experienced dudes, good teams are going to be down people's throats.
Yeah, and I know we got to wrap it up here, but you got me all excited to see Haynes King, because I was like you. I thought Kellen Mond did a good job of, you know, you're right. You go to an A&M practice before that Florida State practice, and you watch Jimbo work. And I mean, a game is like a kid that's going to recess. You go to a game, you're like, this is easy. And he's very big on, I'm going to make practice way harder than a game. And you go to a practice and watch him, and I'm just like, wow. You better have thick skin to be his quarterback. Now, he'll love on you, but man, he is going to challenge your manhood. So I'm fired up now that they announced Haynes King as a freshman rolling in there, and they got a lot to work with there too. Yep. So we're really going to find out, you know, and they've got Colorado, they got Arkansas, you got Mississippi State. You can get a scare anywhere, but the Alabama game on October 9th is, I think, the game. It's in Kyle Field. That's the game that all Aggies fans are saying, boy, I can't wait till October 9th. You know, that's when we really find out. By then, Haynes King will have some games under his belt.
Yeah.
Find out if A&M is ready to take it to Alabama. That'll be a great game.
This podcast is merely the appetizer for the rest of the season. The best part about it is we were actually able to talk some college football. Week 0 is on the way. Kirk and I will be with you each and every Monday, recapping and previewing the weeks ahead. Herbie, let's go.
Here we go. Can't wait. Looking forward to hanging out with you all year on a Monday, man. You and I text all the time, but it'll be fun to be able to actually talk ball and be fun to recap on a Monday. I guess we'll recap what happened, kind of like what you guys do on your show with Joey and Jesse on those late Saturday nights. We can kind of have an extension of that. And then, you know, nothing wrong with peeking ahead a little bit to some of the more intriguing matchups on the week to come.
Well, hell, we're going to have many of those to talk about in week one. I mean, we can talk about Illinois, Nebraska, all that all we want, but we know what looms in week one. So, hey, have a good show this week and game day. Safe travels. We'll do this again next week.
All right, brother.
All right, as promised, my guest each and every Sunday. I feel like we're going back in time to about what, 2016, 2017, when Paul Feinbaum and I hosted the College Football Podcast on Sundays. Paul, if I was with you, I'd hug you.
I wish you would, Matt, but those were such great days because we would get together. I never thought about a single thing that we were going to say until I was heading to the airport from Bristol, and I would, you know, it had already been posted, and I'm like thinking, oh my goodness, did I just say that? People were tweeting it ad nauseum, which I hope happens again.
You know, yeah, I'm excited to be back talking college football with you this Sunday after what's always an intriguing Saturday. And look, we can talk about all the garbage that happened this offseason, the playoff talk, the realignment, the NIL, all of that. But I want to talk football. For you, Paul, going into this season, give me the most intriguing thing people should look forward to as we head into week zero and week one.
Well, I would start with Oklahoma, Matt, and Spencer Rattler, because I really think they can win the national championship. I'm well aware of Oklahoma's issues in the past, but I think, you know, I mean, I pick Alabama every year. You know that. I mean, that's not even it's ordained that I have to pick Alabama, and I'm right about half the time. So it's really better than trying to find a sleeper and being wrong every year. But I'm intrigued by them. I feel similarly about Georgia. I'm really high on them. I have this sneaking suspicion that after the first weekend, being high on Georgia, it may not be a popular thing to be because they're playing Clemson. I look around the country, you know, who is going to emerge? You know, who is going to remain? I think, you know, there's, you know, Ryan Day continues to just pile on talent after talent at Ohio State. I don't think college football is going to change dramatically. No. This year, but I do think there'll be some huge stories at the end of it, though.
Look, I'm glad you said it, because I've been saying this whole offseason, like, there's so many good top five teams that are breaking in new starting quarterbacks. But the two that I've ID'd all offseason, Spencer Rattler, Oklahoma, experienced quarterback, and then JT Daniels in Georgia. I look at both of those. I think I'm going to say this without getting everybody all fired up, but it's a podcast. That's our job. I think Kirby Smart has to be careful, because he can load up this roster with talent all day long. Well, so did Mark Richt. I know we got to a national championship game and then lost to a then freshman Tua in Alabama. Paul, he's got to be one of those coaches that he's top 2-3 in recruiting rankings every year. It's going to have to show up on Saturdays and through the college football playoff. I think this is the year for Kirby Smart in Georgia, just because of the talent coming back and finally an experienced quarterback in JT Daniels, who lives up to all of the hype he got coming out of high school.
Yeah, I will not agree with you many more times this year, but I completely agree with you on that. And I mean, I've already heard a couple of people even coming through this show and other shows saying this is national championship or bust. I won't go that far, but if let's just play this scenario out. Let's say we're talking on the Monday after the first regular season Saturday before Labor Day, and they look bad against Clemson.
Yeah,
which they could. I mean, they have countless injuries. Then all of a sudden the pressure starts to build, and that's not where you want to be. Knowing your only way to get to the playoffs is to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. I mean, that's a dreadful gauntlet to think about.
How many, you know, because we use these comparison all the time in sports. We say Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing during the Michael Jordan era, Phil Mickelson in the Tiger Woods era, Ernie Els, all those guys. You could say that about so many coaches in the Nick Saban era that they may have a damn good football team, but you're not getting through Tuscaloosa and getting to a national championship because of what he's built there. Nick Saban.
No, that is so good. I mean, in every era of sports, you have that. And, you know, for Kirby, it's a matter of surviving until Saban gets out of the way.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's still a young guy, but he's not going to be a young guy if 3 years from now we're still having this conversation. And I don't think he has to win it this year, but, you know, beating Clemson would really go a long way towards solving that wound. Because you understand it. You lived in South Carolina. But
yep.
The Clemson people and Georgia people, I mean, that's a serious rivalry.
It's one that went away, and it was always so good when it was present. Went away for a couple of years. It's found its way back. It was one of those historical rivalries in the South, upstate of South Carolina and Georgia. I'm so glad that's a part of the week one slate. And as we look forward at it, we've got week zero. We've got Nebraska, Illinois, UCLA, and Hawaii also plays on Saturday. Paul, I'm going to tell you this. I'm a Pac-12 guy. I went to Arizona State. I believe that UCLA has the opportunity to be the surprise team in the entire country this year. I really do.
I understand that. And I mean, it pains me that we're agreeing on everything right now. But
it's week zero. We got to work it out.
But I mean, of all the games Saturday that you'll have to pay attention to, that's the UCLA-Hawaii game is the one I'm watching, because I am intrigued by what happens the next week. And primarily because I've heard LSU fans go on and on about how great their team is going to be. And I remember another SEC coach, 4 or 5 years ago, that they went out to UCLA on the first Sunday night of the year, I think, and he didn't see the end of the season. That was Kevin Sumlin.
Yeah. And look, there are opportunities early on for a lot of these cross divisional games. That's a big one for the Pac-12. Yeah. UCLA can make a statement for the Pac-12. Oregon against Ohio State on the road, big one for the Pac-12. The one thing that we do say all the time, you measure a conference, I believe, on what they do against other leagues early in the year. Because top to bottom, look, they're the same. You see these teams every year. But go get me against a power team at a different conference, Paul, then you can assess who they really are.
No, you look at it early, and then at the end of the year in the bowl games, that's the lasting impression you have. So I'm intrigued by your UCLA pick, because nobody is giving Chip Kelly any credit. And I just think back a couple of years ago when we would sit with him on Sunday mornings, and he was literally the most coveted coach in the country at the time.
And I'll go one step further. I think they are better than USC. We'll see if that translates throughout the season. I'm gonna pull the curtain back of this first podcast, getting ready for the season. Paul is literally getting ready to go on television and radio as we speak with Paul Beinbaum Show on SEC Network. We're going to let you run, but I will say this. Saw the announcement. Congratulations. You're back on SEC Nation, and you're a TikTok star now, I understand. You do TikTok?
Well, I did it for the promo. It was about a week and a half ago. I have not seen what it looks like yet. I'll whisper this. How do I get on TikTok, Mac? You know, I'm not exactly of that generation.
Well, you're apparently a TikTok star now. So everyone, you're done downloading this, pull up TikTok. The one and only Paul Feinbaum will be there today, as he will be with me every Sunday throughout the college football season. Paul, good talk. Always love it. I can't wait for this year.
Thanks, Matt. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, that'll do it for we're going to call this a preseason kickoff to the College Football Podcast. Our thanks to Kirk Herbstreit and, of course, Paul Feinbaum. And we will be here each and every week this college football season.